Democratic National Convention in Chicago. This is Democracy Now! War, Peace, and the Presidency, breaking with convention.
Today we held up a sign protesting the murder of children in Gaza and the continuing genocide.
On the opening night of the Democratic National Convention, three Democratic delegates unveil a banner reading Stop Arming Israel while President Biden was addressing the convention. We speak to the delegates, part of Delegates Against Genocide, but first we look at the role of the labor movement here at the DNC. UAW President Sean Fain spoke on stage.
So for us in the labor movement, it's real simple. Kamala Harris is one of us. She's a fighter for the working class. And Donald Trump is a scam.
We'll speak to Stacey Davis Gates, the president of the Chicago Teachers Union, and Alex Hahn of In These Times. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. We are breaking with convention, war, peace, and the presidency. I'm Amy Goodman. President Biden took to the stage on the first night of the Democratic National Convention Monday, where he passed the torch to Vice President Kamala Harris.
Selecting Kamala was the very first decision I made when I became our nominee. And it was the best decision I made my whole career.
Minutes into Biden's remarks, activists dropped a sign that read, Stop Arming Israel, after headlines will speak to three delegates involved in last night's actions. The DNC on Monday evening voted to adopt the party's official platform, which does not call for an arms embargo on Israel and reasserts unwavering U.S. support for Israel. Among other high-profile speakers Monday night was New York Congress member Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
We have a chance to elect a president who is for the middle class, because she is from the middle class. She understands the urgency of rent checks and groceries and prescriptions. She is as committed to our reproductive and civil rights as she is to taking on corporate greed. And she is working tirelessly to secure a ceasefire in Gaza and bringing hostages home.
New York Congressmember Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's speech came after her fellow squad members, Cori Bush and Jamal Bowman, recently lost their House seats after AIPAC poured tens of millions of dollars into their primary challengers' campaigns. Also on the DNC stage Monday night, three women, Amanda Zaroski, Caitlin Joshua, and Hadley Duvall, shared their experiences trying to get abortions after the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade. Caitlin Joshua described her experience living through Louisiana's abortion ban.
2 years ago, my husband and I were expecting our second child. Our daughter, Lauren, couldn't wait to be a big sister. I was getting ready for her fourth birthday party when something didn't feel right. Two emergency rooms sent me away. Because of Louisiana's abortion ban, no one would confirm that I was miscarrying. I was in pain, bleeding so much my husband feared for my life. No woman should experience what I endured, but too many have. They write to me saying, what happened to you happened to me. Sometimes they're miscarrying, scared to tell anyone, even their doctors. Our daughters deserve better. America deserves better.
In more news from Chicago, thousands of protesters took to the streets Monday as part of the march on the DNC. Amidst a heavy police presence, a group of protesters broke off from the main march and headed to the United Center, where they breached a security fence as they chanted, "Whose streets are streets?" before police began marking arrests. During a separate action Monday, Sherry Hankala with the Poor People's Army was also arrested near the United Center after she crossed a police line as she attempted to walk into the DNC to deliver a citizen's arrest warrant for Democratic leaders the Poor People's Army has accused of crimes against humanity. This is Hankala speaking before her arrest.
Either arrest me or let me continue to
continue
walk.
Push
am I under arrest? If I'm not,
I need to
continue
too.
To walk. You You're do not have way. A right to beat or hurt me. I'm asking
Hankala
you.
Hankala led a similar action in Milwaukee last month, the site of the Republican National Convention, where she was also arrested. Several members of the Poor People's Army walked from Milwaukee to Chicago ahead of the Democratic National Convention. To see our interview with Sherry Hankala in Milwaukee, go to democracynow.org. Another speaker to take the stage on the first night of the Democratic National Convention was United Auto Workers President Sean Fain.
So for us in the labor movement, it's real simple. Kamala Harris is one of us. She's a fighter for the working class. And Donald Trump is a scab.
As the DNC got underway, hundreds of nurses from the University of Illinois Hospital stood on the picket line as they kicked off a week-long strike just a few miles from the United Convention Center. The Illinois Nurses Association says UI Health has refused to address understaffing, unsafe working conditions, and fair pay demands. In more labor news, over 1,000 workers at New York's Cornell University are on strike over pay and benefits and over Cornell's refusal to negotiate in good faith, they say. The strike comes as Cornell students started streaming onto campus for the start of the new school year. The Cornell workers, which include maintenance and dining room staff, gardeners and custodians, say they can't afford to live near campus on their salary and often struggle to afford other basic necessities. They're unionized with United Auto Workers. UAW President Sean Fain gave the striking Cornell workers a shout out from the DNC stage last night. Ukraine has ordered families to evacuate Russia's eastern city of Pokrovsk as Ukrainian forces continue to advance in Russia's Kursk region. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said Monday, Ukrainian attacks in the region showed Moscow's threats of retaliation were a bluff.
We are now experiencing an extremely important ideological shift, namely the entire naive, illusory concept of so-called red lines regarding Russia, which dominated the assessment of the war by some of our partners, has crumbled these days somewhere near Sudza. Russian military bases and Russian military airfields, Russian logistics and other military facilities whose existence allows Putin to avoid seeking peace are entirely legitimate targets for our defense forces.
In Mexico, unions representing judicial workers launched an indefinite strike Monday as lawmakers prepare to vote on a highly contested court reform. Judges joined other court workers in opposing the proposed overhaul, which would see judges, including those on the Mexican Supreme Court, be elected by the people. The striking unions warn courts are the only counterweight to the ruling Morena Party's authority. This is judicial employee Maria Cisneros speaking in Mexico City.
We are not against reform. All reforms are good, but not from a discourse of hatred, polarization, and saying that the judiciary is evil, that the judiciary is corrupt.
In India, hundreds of thousands of doctors have prolonged their nationwide strike over the rape and murder of a young medical trainee in a Calcutta hospital earlier this month. Doctors at public hospitals turned away all but emergency patients Monday as they continued to take to the streets in protest.
It's not a rape of a doctor. It's not a rape of a doctor. It's a rape of a daughter. She was a daughter. She was a mother. Sister, someone's sister. So
if we do not raise a voice for ourselves, then no one ever will.
And in health news, authorities in the Democratic Republic of Congo say they are hopeful the country will receive its first doses of mpox vaccines by next week after pledges from the U.S. and Japan. The World Health Organization declared mpox a global public health emergency last week, but the disease has overwhelmingly affected West and Central African nations so far, especially the DRC, where mpox was already endemic, but access to vaccines is low or non-existent. One of the strains detected is believed to be more lethal than previous ones. Even when not deadly, mpox can cause fever, rashes, and extremely painful lesions. Children are particularly vulnerable. Meanwhile, shares of mpox vaccine manufacturers are surging following the WHO public health emergency declaration. GeoVax Labs, Tonix Pharmaceuticals, and Emergent BioSolutions are some of the companies hoping to profit from the mpox crisis. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. War, peace, and the presidency breaking with convention. When we come back, we'll hear UAW President Sean Fain speaking at the first night of the Democratic National Convention. And we'll speak with the head of the Chicago Teachers Union. Stay with us. By the selector. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. War, peace, and the presidency breaking with convention. We're broadcasting from the studios of CAN TV here in Chicago. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world. The Democratic National Convention began Monday in Chicago, a city with a rich labor history and a mayor who was a former teachers union organizer. Mayor Brandon Johnson kicked off the opening night of the DNC. Not invited to the DNC was Teamsters President Sean O'Brien, who spoke at the Republican National Convention last month. Several other union leaders did address the DNC on Monday, including United Auto Workers President Sean Fain.
For the UAW and for working class people everywhere, this election comes down to one question. Which side are you on? On one side, we have Kamala Harris and Tim Walz, who have stood shoulder to shoulder with the working class. On the other side, we have Trump and Vance. Two lapdogs for the billionaire class who only serve themselves. So for us in the labor movement, it's real simple. Kamala Harris is one of us. She's a fighter for the working class. And Donald Trump is a scab.
Okay.
That's a fact. All we have to do is look at the track record. When Donald Trump was president, corporate America ran wild. Donald Trump did not bring back the auto industry. When Donald Trump was president, auto plants closed. Trump did nothing. Trump told workers in Lordstown, Ohio, that he would be bringing all the auto jobs back. And Trump did nothing. In 2019, General Motors workers went on strike for 40 days for good jobs and a better life. And Trump did nothing. Talk is cheap. But in 2019, you know who was on the picket line standing shoulder to shoulder with auto workers? I'll give you a clue. Her initials are Kamala Harris. In 2023, who helped bring jobs back to Lordstown, Ohio? Kamala Harris. And in 2024, who will stand with the working class in our fight for justice? Kamala Harris. And that's the difference. Donald Trump is all talk, and Kamala Harris walks the walk. Woo. In the words of the great American poet, Nelly, it's getting hot in here. Donald Trump laughs about firing workers who go on strike. And Kamala Harris stand shoulder to shoulder with workers when they're on strike. And that's the difference between Kamala Harris and Donald Trump the scab. Trump is pushing divide and conquer tactics of the rich. It's the oldest trick in the book. They want to blame the frustrations of working class people. They want to take those frustrations. They want to blame it on race. They want to blame it on LGBTQ plus people. They want to blame it on some destitute and desperate person at the border. They do that because they want working class people to be divided and to focus and keep the focus off the one true enemy, corporate greed.
That was UAW President Sean Fain addressing the Democratic National Convention on the first night of these four nights. Midway through his speech, Fain took off his suit jacket to show he was wearing a T-shirt that read, "Trump is a scab." Fain's speech comes as the UAW is warning it may call for a new national strike against Stellantis. Also at the DNC Monday night, Vice President Kamala Harris surprised people by briefly speaking. She ended her address the same way she's ending her stump speeches, saying, "When we fight, we win," which is a longtime labor slogan. For more, we're joined by two guests with a long history of labor organizing in Chicago and beyond. Stacey Davis Gates is president of the powerful Chicago Teachers Union, the former union of Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson. And Alex Hahn is with us, executive director of In These Times, a Chicago publication that's covered movements for change for decades. Alex was the vice president of SEIU Healthcare Illinois and Indiana for over a decade and was Midwest political director for Bernie Sanders in 2020. Both Alex and Stacey helped found United Working Families, which has elected dozens of working class leaders. We welcome you both to Democracy Now! Alex, let's begin with you. Just for a little placement here in Chicago, talk about the history of this labor town.
Yeah, I mean, thank you for having me, Amy. It's about, I think, about 15 blocks away from here is Haymarket Square, where in 1886, you know, immigrant workers gathered to demand an eight-hour day, were attacked viciously by police, and several labor organizers who are martyred and buried a few miles west of here. Chicago is the city in this country with the most local ones. CTU is Local 1 of the American Federation of Teachers. SEIU Local 1, representing building service workers. Carpenters Local 1, Unite Here Local 1. The list goes on. Chicago has a rich history, not just of those origins, but of labor struggle and battle. And I do think, you know, the revitalization over the last 10 or 15 years that we've seen in the American labor movement obviously is not entirely coming out of the city of Chicago, but unions like the Chicago Teachers Union, my former union, SEIU Healthcare Illinois, SEIU Local 73, the Illinois Nurse Association on strike right down the street from the studio here. These are all unions that have been fighting unions that have really helped to shift the tide. I mean, when we talk about Vice President Harris ending her speeches, and it throws me off when I hear her say, "When we fight, we win," at the end of her speech, and I realize that's the Vice President of the United States. It's pretty remarkable to think of how far we've come. It's also important for, you know, sitting here in Chicago, I think we understand how far we still have to go. Right. These are victories. These are important markers. But we still have, you know, endemic poverty and inequality. We still have a city in which workers don't get their fair share. But we can imagine fighting for all the things that our communities need.
And could you talk a little bit about the impact of the organized labor in terms of local government, the city council, and obviously a mayor who comes out of the ranks of the labor movement?
I do think we've seen a pretty remarkable transformation, Juan, in politics in Chicago, and I think something that, you know, is in coordination, in partnership with a lot of efforts around the country, a lot of efforts around the globe, really in a lot of ways for us to say, how do we not just elect the people who are going to align with our platform? How do we not pick the lawyers and the people who have the money to run, who come to us and say, okay, you know, we agree 90%, and so you can support us? A lot of that has been about how do we actually lift people up from our movements? And I think that's not just the labor movement. You know, it is the kind of intersecting and intertwined social movements that in Chicago have been working closely together with labor. Not always seeing eye to eye, but figuring out ways to work together to advance a bigger fight.
And Stacey, I wanted to ask you about, you're considered the most powerful labor leader in Chicago by many. Could you talk about the influence that the Chicago Teachers Union has had on local politics here in this city?
Well, if you talk about the power the Chicago Teachers Union has, you have to talk about the power we have in coalition. Our power is one that includes the word "and." It is the union and it is the community. It is the community and the families we serve. It is the families we serve and the students we serve. And so this idea that one entity or one person can be powerful is opposite of how we express power here. Listen, our power was born out of Rahm Emanuel closing 50 schools, and the next day Karen Lewis saying that we are going to shape efforts to hold politicians accountable for the harm they do to our communities, especially communities of color.
And it's really significant that the mayor now, Brandon Johnson, came out of the Chicago Teachers Union, right? Was an organizer for the Chicago Teachers Union.
Well, it's a study in contrast. I think what we saw last night at the United Center was this parliament. And the part of the parliament that I belong to, labor, progressive leadership, expressed this idea of how we not just give lip service to the policies that are necessary, Medicare for all, a new sustainable green economy, full school funding, but that they also have the struggle in which to do so. So last night's stage had SEIU President April Verrett, who was a native daughter of the South Side of Chicago, who helped to create the infrastructure where Brandon Johnson, labor organizer, middle school teacher, is now the mayor of this great city. You saw a collision of our politics and our power. And the possibility of that extending beyond Chicago.
And Alex, I wanted to ask you, last night in his speech, President Biden proclaimed proudly that he was the first sitting president to walk a picket line and really spoke about the importance of labor unions in general. Your reaction to those remarks and to the president's record on labor?
Yeah, I mean, I think in large part he's earned that distinction. Part of it speaks to, you know, let's be real, in the modern era, it's a relatively low bar to be the best labor president in modern history. It's a relatively low bar to be the best labor president in history. You know, I think about the wake of the 2020 Bernie Sanders campaign and the Sanders and Biden unity committees that really helped create a lot of the structure. The policy structure, the political and personnel structure, particularly around issues of labor, particularly around issues of, you know, a new green economy. I think that these are really movement victories. And I do think that, you know, while we have a lot of other issues, we have a lot of other challenges, again, very far to go, I think it's important for us to recognize and claim those victories.
And Stacey, in terms of you're currently in negotiations with the city now for a new contract. How's that going now with your former employee now being the guy you negotiated across the table from?
Well, again, the Democratic Party is a study in contrast. The city of Chicago has been undergirded by a neoliberal policy that has helped to marginalize the common good in Chicago. So the common good is marginalized in transportation, where the rail line doesn't extend deep into Black communities on the South Side. The marginalization of public education, where Black students have to travel well beyond their neighborhoods to attend public school. These things are a study in contrast because people like Rahm Emanuel came to Chicago to take from the many and to ingratiate the few. And then you have Brandon Johnson, who's been in office for a short time. He's given families paid time off. He has abolished sub-minimum wage. He has created some of the most generous parental paid leave time in this country, and it still isn't enough. So you have this idea of generations of policies that help to sustain and fortify segregation and oppression up against this idea of progressive policy led by Black leadership, labor, community. So we are struggling through what it took all those years to fortify injustice, and now we are breaking through. And the headlines speak of this, quite frankly. You have a legacy media locally that doesn't know how to tell the story of aspiration and hope and promise that our movement has been pushing for so long.
Alex Han, I wanted to ask you about, you were vice president of the SEIU, Illinois and Indiana, for over a decade. I wanted to get your response to then California Senator Kamala Harris speaking at the SEIU's Unions for All Summit in 2019 and her comments on collective bargaining.
We need to have protection so that you can unionize, so that you can engage in collective bargaining. But it is also about recognizing that we've got to do it sector by sector. It can no longer be that a specific group around a specific place has to organize. We need to do it sector by sector. That's what I'm doing around domestic workers. I plan to do the same for childcare workers. I plan to do the same for fast food workers. Because my feeling is just, it's this basic. Nobody should be made to fight alone.
So that's Kamala Harris when she was California Senator 2019 at the Unions for All conference. The significance of what she was saying, Alex.
I mean, sectoral bargaining where workers industry by industry are able to kind of raise standards across the whole industry. It is, across a lot of Western Europe, it is how bargaining happens. Bargaining happens sector by sector. And it's been a big priority for SEIU. It's been developing over the last decade. And so I do think, seeing that commitment is really meaningful and real to talk not just about support for unions in the abstract, support for unions in a broad sense, but really to talk about the specific demands of unions. I would also connect that to the public bargaining that the Chicago Teachers Union is doing right now. I would connect it to what UAW President Sean Fain brought up around the issues happening at Stellantis right now, where the UAW fought for the right to strike over product commitments in their last strike in 2023. A big chunk of that strike was, about righting the historic wrongs of the concessions that have been made. But another big part that was a lot harder for people to see that aren't in the weeds of labor negotiating is winning the right to strike over issues that impact workers day to day. And so the fact that there is, grievances being filed at over a half a dozen plants, that the groundwork is being laid for a potential national strike at Stellantis, these are all of a piece. Sectoral bargaining in places like fast food and healthcare, where it's so hard, workplace by workplace, to improve conditions. Bargaining out in public, which is a key demand of bargaining for the common good. And then being able to strike over real issues that workers are facing. I think we are seeing, a real step forward in the labor movement. And it's really great to see that Kamala Harris has been, steadfast in that over the last 5 years.
And I wanted to ask Stacey Davis-Gates, your union held a two-day conference just before the convention opened of progressives around the country. You had Senator Bernie Sanders spoke and said, what we are seeing right now is the rebirth and revitalization of the trade union movement. Why did you feel it was so important to have that conference? And what do you think came out of it in terms of its impact on the convention delegates and the rest of the week?
Again, going back to this idea of the party being a parliament, the progressive Democrats have a platform that our vice president and our eventual nominee, Governor Walz, will, provide for America. Look, the better America that my union gets to struggle for is possible because we protest. It is possible because we strike. It is possible because we rally. Look, 80% of the schools in the city of Chicago, the third largest city in this country, with the biggest economy, in the Midwest, 80% of our schools do not have libraries or librarians. It is that dichotomy, it is that gap that we are pushing Madam Vice President to close. In fact, we think she can. Look, President Biden established a benchmark for school funding for all of our schools across the country. In fact, it was their administration who has given us the most ever. What does that mean? That the Harris-Walz administration has to go beyond that. But they can only go beyond that if we are united and organized organized in our call for it. Look, I think it is good to have people who understand how to listen to the movement. Vice President Harris heard the movement and prosecuted the banks for their nefarious behavior during the housing crisis. That is the same behavior we're fighting against here in Chicago with the bad bank deals that Rahm Emanuel got the school district in. We have a governor from Minnesota who listens to the movement, and consequently, you have school funding at record levels in that state, as well as they feed children every single morning for free. That's the type of leadership that we need at the top. But you only get that leadership if you have a community labor coalition struggling, pushing, challenging, and demanding that type of equity and justice.
Alex Hahn, I wanted to ask you about Gaza ceasefire and labor politics. Chicago became the largest U.S. city to call for a Gaza ceasefire when Mayor Johnson broke a Chicago City Council tie to pass the resolution. You also have Mayor Brandon Johnson in a quote in an interview just recently saying what's happening right now is not only egregious, it's genocidal. We have to acknowledge and name it for what it is and have the moral courage to exercise our authority. And then that was in an interview last night. He was one of the first speakers at the Democratic National Convention here in Chicago. Now, you yourself have been involved with Israel-Palestine politics. You were arrested, when was it? In December, protesting U.S. support for Israel and Gaza after you took that position at In These Times as executive director. Can you talk about your action and the significance, for example, of UAW also being one of the early unions to call for a ceasefire?
Yeah, I mean, this is really the central and critical issue that people are talking about at this moment. In December, you know, I participated in an action with dozens of leaders of largely of kind of base building, the kind of organizations where in swing states like Michigan or Wisconsin or North Carolina, they're the ones that Democrats depend to get out the vote. They're the ones that Democrats depend on to build up a field operation that's going to talk to young people, that's going to talk to young people of color, that's going to talk to constituencies that are not the most dependable voters. And they are, frankly, some of the organizations that are really responsible for winning the election in 2020 and defeating Trump. The first time we did it. And so I was really proud to be able to stand with those leaders, to stand out right outside of the Senate chambers and take a rest while calling for at that moment. I think it was the day before they went on their Christmas end of the year break and the last opportunity, really, for the Senate to take action on what at the time were resolutions to advance the question of ceasefire. And I do think it's really meaningful to see Mayor Brandon Johnson, the mayor of the largest city, to pass a ceasefire resolution, the only large city mayor at any scale that I've seen really take a position on this. It was significant to have him open the convention and to see President Fain from the UAW, to see President April Verrett of SEIU, two unions that have called on the Biden-Harris administration for an immediate cessation of weapons transfers to Israel. They called on him publicly several weeks ago. I think we are seeing, you know, there are so many, there's so much progress to be made. But to see unions that represent almost half of all union members in this country calling not just for a ceasefire, but for an arms embargo, calling for an immediate cessation of weapons, that's a huge shift in the American labor movement. And I think at a scale that hasn't happened.
Well, I want to thank you both for being with us. Really interesting conversation. And even as we leave Chicago, though Juan lives here, and it's been great doing this broadcast with him, we're spending the week here in Chicago for the Democratic Convention. We hope to continue to speak with both of you. Stacey Davis Gates is president of the Chicago Teachers Union, and Alex Hahn is executive director of In These Times. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. We turn now to New York Congressmember Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez speaking at the DNC on Monday night, the first night of the Democratic National Convention, talking about labor rights and the war on Gaza.
In Kamala Harris, we have a chance to elect a president who is for the middle class because she is from the middle class. She understands the urgency of rent checks and groceries and prescriptions. She is as committed to our reproductive and civil rights as she is to taking on corporate greed. And she is working tirelessly to secure a ceasefire in Gaza and bringing hostages home. In Kamala Harris, I see a leader who understands. I see a leader with a real commitment to a better future for working families. And Chicago, we have to help her win. Because we know that Donald Trump would sell this country for a dollar if it meant lining his own pockets and greasing the palms of his Wall Street friends. And I, for one, am tired of hearing about how a two-bit union buster thinks of himself as more of a patriot than the woman who fights every single day to lift working people out from under the boots of greed, trampling on our way of life. The truth is, Don, you cannot love this country if you only fight for the wealthy and big business. To love this country is to fight for its people. All people, working people, everyday Americans like bartenders and factory workers and fast food cashiers who punch a clock and are on their feet all day in some of the toughest jobs out there.
That was New York Congressmember Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez speaking on the first night of the Democratic National Convention here in Chicago. When we come back, on this opening night of the DNC, three Democratic delegates unveiled a banner reading Stop Arming Israel while President Biden was addressing the convention. We'll speak to all three. They are part of Delegates Against Genocide. Back in a minute.
Say elected because 55% of them are not elected to the
you're
DNC.
You're elected and you're elected.
Yeah.
Memories of a Palestinian Wound by Amal Mirkus. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, War, Peace, and the Presidency, Breaking with Convention. I'm Amy Goodman here with Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. On Monday night, President Biden headlined the opening night of the Democratic National Convention. A few minutes into his remarks, three delegates unfurled a banner that read, "Stop Arming Israel." The action took place where the Florida delegation was sitting. While some other delegates snatched the banner away, many delegates quickly raised Joe Biden placards that read, "Thank you, Joe," and "I love Joe," to block any view of the banner. More and more of those placards were brought out to cover the banner as much as possible. The protesting delegates who unfurled that banner were quickly escorted from the convention floor by security. Democracy Now! Was nearby when it happened.
From Michigan.
And what did you do today?
Today we held up a sign protesting the murder of children in Gaza and the continuing genocide.
Watch your step. What did the sign say?
It said, stop arming Israel.
All right, thank you. Let's keep it going.
We'll
watch out, get
the
lady
talking.
Let's get into the tunnel. You can interview him in the tunnel, okay?
And what happened
there? I just don't want you to break your ankles.
Then the people behind us grabbed a hold of the sign and tried to rip it out of our hands several times. Hey, eventually, they succeeded.
Interview in the hall, okay? Let's get him down. Come on. All right, thanks for being cooperative, sir.
Yeah,
okay.
No problem.
Thank you.
And why did you do it?
I did that because we are currently funding a genocide, and it needs to stop. And also, I want to make it clear to the Harris campaign that this is actually in their interest. Okay. Netanyahu is trying to instigate a larger war so he could remain in power and avoid going to prison.
We're joined now by the three DNC delegates who unfurled the Stop Arming Israel banner. They're all members of Delegates Against Genocide. Nadja Ahmed is a Florida Democratic National Committee delegate and member. Liana Sharon is a longtime Jewish progressive activist and elected DNC delegate from Michigan. And Assam Barai is a delegate from Connecticut. We welcome you all to Democracy Now! Here in Chicago. Liana, I want to start with you because you were the one escorted out by security. If you can explain further why you did what you did, as we heard in that clip as you were talking, as you were taken out, you're Jewish Michigan delegate, Democratic National Committee member.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, as I said, when I was escorted out, I was always raised as a Jew that never again means never again for anyone, anywhere, ever, period. And that's not what we're doing. We are currently continuing to arm a Zionist regime that is set on genocide and mass murder of children, and we need to stop that. And there isn't anything else that is as important as that in this moment. So that's why I did it.
And Isam, I'd like to ask you how you managed to organize it. You're from different states, and you're the motivation for you to get involved in this kind of protest right on the floor of the convention.
Thanks to Nadia. Since we learned that we would be part of the DNC delegation to Chicago, we quickly came together with our history together on organizing and activism in the community since that the war on Gaza started. And we decided to do something, and we wanted to make sure that our voices are heard. We tried multiple ways and many ways of doing these things, and that was our last resort last night. It means a lot because you know, I'm as an immigrant myself, I was once a political activist back in my home country of Egypt, and I was kicked out of the country because I was pushing for justice and equality for everybody. And I believe, and I still do, that within the convention, that will be the best platform that our voices will be heard. And this is why, following Nadia's lead on that, we decided to do something yesterday.
So, Nadia, this was your delegation. This was the Florida delegation where you unfurled this banner. It was almost as if they knew. I mean, I was amazed at the alacrity with which, first, they immediately put up these banners that said, "We love Joe. Thank you, Joe." But they didn't have enough to cover the banner. And so someone had a large stash of them, and they were bringing more and more, and they were handing them out. So people were holding two and three to cover up this banner. Did other delegates know or in any way support what you did? And talk about your work in Florida. You're a professor. You're also getting a PhD.
So for me, this was really a matter of being able to speak up for the community. And this was a moment where we have a massive audience. And we were there specifically to confront President Joe Biden. We could have confronted at any time at that convention, but we chose specifically during President Joe Biden's address because he's the one who can stop this genocide by picking up the phone and making a phone call. And he has chosen not to do that. And for the organizing that we have done, it's really something that has happened on its own, that whether you saw with the student encampments that have happened since April, and also with the protests, that's been just endless and ceaseless. And we felt that we could make a change within the party, and that's why we took the actions that we did. And I specifically decided to do it in Florida, and that was a strategic location because we felt that it would be harder for them to take down the banner right away. But I don't think they knew about it. But what they did, because throughout the time that we were there, they kept giving banners and posters. So they just started to just give a lot more in that particular area.
Mm. And I'm wondering just tactically how you managed to get the banner in, because I'm sure that they're on the lookout for any kind of protest signs that are not part of the official placards that are distributed at the convention.
So I was a reporter for 6 years. I'm an attorney and a law professor. I've been to the White House a number of times. I've been to DNC events. So I know, like, the level of security that they will go through. And I also felt that if I didn't wear anything, like, I wore hijab, I tried to wear something that wouldn't attract attention. So I wore a large dress to kind of just wrapped it around myself.
You're wearing a Yale University t-shirt right now.
Yeah.
What's your connection?
So I'm a PhD student there. I was also the first visible Muslim woman or a hijabi to be somebody who taught there with the rank of professor.
Hmm. And I'm wondering for any of you, the conversations you've been having with fellow delegates, what your sense is of the unspoken support that exists for Gaza among the delegates who don't dare say anything?
There's a great deal of it. We spoke to a large number of delegates, and the vast majority of the people that we spoke to, especially the people that I spoke to, were supportive of the idea, but were intimidated by the party. In fact, we know of people who were told explicitly that if you participate in this, you will never have a position in the party again. And that's the kind of intimidation that we really have to expunge from the Democratic Party, because we have a right to protest and to have our voices heard and to have our opinions known.
Describe the sash that you're wearing.
This is a Palestinian symbol, kafia. This is these lines symbolize the Mediterranean Sea, and the dots symbolize the olives, which are, you know, important symbols of Palestine. And that says Democrats for Palestinian rights. which I don't know why anybody in the Democratic Party could possibly object to Palestinian rights or human rights anywhere.
Mm. Issam, can you describe what happened to you on Sunday around a Palestinian flag?
Oh, yeah. So we arrived, I arrived in Chicago on Sunday afternoon, and as part of our efforts to raise the Palestinian issue within the party, we were invited to an event by the American Palestinian Community Association. And there they shared, gave us flags, Palestinian flags and bands. So I didn't have time to go after that event, to go back to my hotel room and drop my stuff. So I decided to go to carry my bag to the reception party. And at the gates, they asked me to open my bag, which I did. And then they started digging into my bag. And immediately, the security guard held my bag for me and said, you need to wait for a minute. And then called his supervisor, who came along and looked at the bag and said, okay, we need to call someone. So he called the DNC people who showed up. And I kept begging for any explanation. So the supervisor told me, like, I'm not going to give you any explanation. The DNC will do, but we're not going to let you in. And then the DNC employees showed up, and they asked me to leave or leave the bag behind. I was not allowed to get in with the flag inside. I told them that I'm not planning on anything. I'm just the flag in my bag. There is no harm found in that whatsoever. But they forced me to go back and leave my bag outside and come in without the bag, which was very concerning.
And I'm wondering, after this convention is over, the debate that will continue among those who believe that the Biden administration, whether it's President Biden or Kamala Harris, are not really moving in the way they should to end this war. What your sense is of what's going to happen in the future in terms of the Gaza support movement? And also, I'm getting the feeling that the Biden administration is really trying to rush to announce a ceasefire before this convention is over as a
true.
Means of building greater unity within the Democratic Party. Your thoughts on that?
We've seen a lot of change in the rhetoric of the party, which is something we really appreciate and support. But that rhetoric is not going to cause any real change on the ground. So we are, I believe our efforts to push forward will continue. However, we have a biggest concern. Like, let's be honest here for a second. So we've been, for the last, not all last night, we've been hearing about we are stopping the fascism from coming to the American politics, and Trump will come back and bring all of the fascism to the American politics again. And here we are, a hijabi woman, a Jew, and an immigrant who just raised the banner. And the immediate reaction was someone from the Democratic Party who starts beating a hijabi woman with a sign on her head. And three others pulled out just the banner while the staff of the DNC encourage everybody to raise their signs as high as possible to block just a simple banner. So if we are fighting fascism, what are we doing in the convention center?
Nadja, we're going to give you the last word. And actually, I'd like to know if any of you want to share with whether you are going to support Kamala Harris in November, what your thoughts are, what your bar is.
So Kamala Harris has to decide if she wants me to support her, because every vote has to be earned. That's been the position of the Democratic Party. And the Democratic Party has taken the Muslim vote, even the African-American vote, for granted for a number of years. Because what are we going to support, a Muslim ban? But we have to decide as a community how we're going to decide. And so 80% of the Muslim community, even higher number, depending on which state you live in, are against the Biden administration and are very much against supporting the Democratic Party. And so if we look at that, I mean, I live in a red state, so it's hard for my vote to have that much of an impact, but it's going to really have an impact.
Mm-hmm. Liana?
So
we have 10 seconds.
Sure, I plan to vote for Harris, okay, because I don't want Trump. That's the only reason. I'm not really voting for Harris. I'm voting against Trump.
Enesa.
I'm a proud Democratic Party member, but Vice President needs to earn my vote.
We're going to leave it there. I want to thank you all for being with us. Essam Barai, a Connecticut delegate, Liano Sharon, a Michigan delegate, and Nadja Ahmed, a Florida delegate. All three with delegates against genocide, unfurled a banner that read, "Stop arming Israel." That does it for our broadcast. It's now an expanded two-hour broadcast during the DNC. Check it all out at democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez from CAN TV in Chicago.